Hello and welcome to this Wednesday edition of Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks so much for being with us. Second hour, Carla Broussard is going to be here, and we're going to talk about the Bible blueprint for the Marian doctrines. So if you're one of those folks who's like, where is all this Mary stuff in the Bible? Well, we're going to look and see if we can find it with Carlo. This hour, pro-life open forum. If you have a question having to do with life and the proper care of life, the proper care of the living person from conception to natural death, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Our guest many times has been on this program. Dr. George Delgado is the medical director for the Culture of Life Family Healthcare. He's a board certified and in family medicine and in hospice and palliative care. And he's certified in healthcare ethics by the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Dr. George Delgado, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. It's great to be here.
For a medical professional such as yourself, is this an extra busy time or are people avoiding you?
Well, a little of both. I've had responsibilities with some of my jobs of doing a lot of planning for the COVID-19 pandemic. So that's kept me very, very busy. On the other hand, in the office, at least initially, people were shying away from coming into the doctor's office. Nobody wanted to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Now it's picking up again and people are grateful that we're there for them. We've been doing both in-person visits as well as telehealth visits.
Oh, so is that going to transform medicine, this telehealth thing?
I think it will, because it was already catching on before this, and it was kind of in fits and spurts, and people saw it as a great thing coming. But the reimbursement by insurance companies and Medicare wasn't really sufficient to make it go. Oh. Now with this COVID-19 pandemic, Medicare and Medicaid are paying for the visits at a much more reasonable rate. And so this has really spurred a lot of people on to setting up telehealth. And I think if the reimbursement stays the way it is, doctors will continue to do it. And I think they will never replace the in-person visits, but for people who have trouble coming into the office because of distance or because of trouble with getting transportation, for certain conditions, it can really be a godsend. It can really complement the in-person visit.
888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. If you have a pro-life question or a question about the ethical treatment of human beings, you are welcome to call that number, 888-318-7884. Have you made note? I mean, it seems like our society has spent, 50 years ruining our ability to have serious moral conversations with one another. And now we're in the place where you have to have serious moral conversations about issues like human life and healthcare. Are you involved in those kind of conversations? And where are you coming down in all of this?
I am. And I've had the opportunity to work with a group led by Bill Goriette, who's an aerospace engineer and who's developed a very interesting model called a Monte Carlo model to help predict the COVID-19 pandemic. The trouble, as we all know, with a lot of these predictive models is that they've been far off the mark and they've had to be continually readjusted. First, they say that everybody's going to die, then nobody, and then they're back and forth. Well, the reason why is because they're mostly curve-fit models. That is, they take the data, and initially they were taking the data from China and Italy, and then extrapolated the curves based on what we were seeing here in the United States. And so here the situations have been much different. Well, the Monte Carlo model, on the other hand, can assign different values to all sorts of different variables, such as age, such as mobility, such as health factors, and then can run random simulations, much like they do when they predict the Super Bowl. The way they predict Super Bowl scores are that they factor in how well the quarterback throws when he has such and such time, or 3 seconds, or only 2 seconds, how good the receivers are catching the ball when they're guarded, covered this closely, how well the linemen are keeping the linebackers out, all those things. And then they do random simulations millions of times, and that's how they come up with the predictions. Well, the same thing can be used with the Monte Carlo model for this, just like Monte Carlo models are used for financial prognostication and for solving very complex problems in physics and engineering.
Uh-huh.
So that, I think, gives us a little bit better handle on it. It gives us a little bit of insight. And we actually have a website, COVIDPlanningTools.com, if people are interested in visiting it.
I am.
And see what we've done. Because you're right, it's been it's been sort of chaos and panic fueled by media reports. So even if you don't use a sophisticated model, you can see how reporting and headlines can really drive the narrative. For example, what they'll say is U.S. deaths now at 75,000. And of course, that's a running total, so it's always going to increase. And so the headline might say death toll jumps again. Well, of course, it's going to jump again because it's always going to increase. The better thing to look at is, for example, the daily death counts. Because if the daily death counts are flat or decreasing, that's a very reassuring sign. Sure, it's sad that people are continuing to die. We don't like that. But the fact that the same number of people are dying per day or lower number of people are dying per day is very reassuring. Deaths are a lagging indicator. So the death to date or the death number today tells us how many infections started 3 weeks ago. So if we see that deaths are declining now, that we know that 3 weeks ago there were fewer infections, so that actually things are looking better and that are either plateauing or are decreasing. Those are the things we need to look at. And I've looked at California very, very carefully. You can look at New York also. In New York, you can see that they're definitely going down. But California, if you look at the deaths, they've been very steady over the last couple of weeks. If you look at hospitalizations and ICU admissions, those are decreasing. And those are also lagging indicators. They're more of a reflection of infections that happened a week or 2 weeks ago. But if you're just looking at cases, that's another thing where the headlines are very misleading, because they say cases jumped again. But of course, every time there's a new case diagnosed or test that's positive, that just increases the tally. What you want to know, actually, not even the number per day, because if you're testing more, you're going to have more positive tests. Just like if you go to a stadium and you're checking for people who have the common cold, let's say you had a test for the common cold, and you went to a stadium, but you only had 10 tests, and you did 10 tests on 10 random people, and let's say one person had the common cold, well, then they brought in a new shipment of 100 tests, and you're able to test 100 people, well, then you have 10 people. So, of course, the number of tests positive is going to rise.
Right.
But what's a better predictive one is the number of positive tests as a percentage of the tests done. And we see that has been decreasing. And in California, that's been steadily below 10% and now down to about 5%. And it's going lower in New York. And really across the country, we're seeing less than 10%. That is extremely reassuring, along with the other reassuring indicators. But of course, that doesn't sell clicks. And so all the news outlets don't report it that way. But it's important for us to see what's really going on so that we can make good decisions and our policymakers can make very well-informed good decisions. And that people don't have to worry that if they step outside of their house that they're suddenly going to drop dead. It's not going to happen.
You know, what about the wider worry? And but we're happy to take your call now. I do want people to know that you can call with your pro-life questions. It's Pro-Life Open Forum this hour, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. You know, we've created this global society now. Is this just a part of that? That there will be occasions on which a disease gets loose in the population, and there's either a group, like in this case, maybe the older folks or folks who have already underlying conditions, or that will affect all of us, maybe, or maybe it'll be in the future it'll affect children more than adults or something. But is this something that we should say, well, this is part of being a global society, and this we're going to need to be ready for it?
Well, I think we do have to be ready for it, because the global society, the spread of viruses and other microbes is just so quick that something starts in China and within weeks it's seeded in other countries. So we have to be ready for that. However, the response, I think, unfortunately, might set a bad precedent, because I think now in retrospect, we can see that there was some overreaction and that we really have subjected ourselves as a society to huge risks by totally locking down the economy mm-hmm. for so long. And so if you just look at the healthcare system itself, all of these measures that were put into place in order to save the healthcare system from collapse under the weight of COVID cases, ironically, is going to lead to the financial collapse of the healthcare system. Because what's happened is that in all places except for New York City and the areas around New York City, the hospitals have been relatively empty. There has been no
right.
business. They've canceled all of the scheduled, the routine surgeries. which normally bring in a lot of revenue to hospitals. So now you're seeing nurses and other medical professionals being laid off. You're seeing hospitals now on the brink of bankruptcy, and you could actually see some very huge untoward consequences where our healthcare system actually is going to end up being much weaker than it was before. Now, what about all those people who got laid off? Well, they're going to lose health insurance. They're going to stop taking care of their medical problems. They're going to get sicker. They may slide into poverty. We know that poverty is a risk factor for COVID-19. We know that not taking care of your health problems is a risk factor for getting more severe COVID-19. Well, if you look at all the other industries, the hospitality industries, we have our unemployment may be up to 25%, they're saying, in some areas. Well, all of those people are not going to be able to take care of themselves. They're not going to eat as well. They're not going to sleep as well. They're going to have more stress. Their immune systems are going to be suppressed. They're not going to be able to take care of all of their medical problems. They're going to be more susceptible to severe COVID-19. So ironically, we may actually even have a significant number of deaths from COVID-19 from people who normally wouldn't have died from it. Or they may be dying from their conditions because they're not going to the doctor when they have chest pain. Yeah. They're not taking care of their emphysema, the diabetes. It goes on and on and on. And so we're going to have huge numbers of people who are suffering and maybe even suffering death because of the unforeseen consequences of shutting down our economy. And those are real, real pro-life issues, actually, if you think about it.
888-318-7884. It's a pro-life open forum. Some folks on the line, but we have to take a break. So we'll come back for your calls. But there are three lines open. So if you want to get in this hour with a pro-life question, a question about what the Catholic Church believes about, you know, caring for those who are very young, still in the womb, those who are very old, those who have disabilities, you're welcome. Or some folks have even said that we Catholics, or we pro-life Catholics in particular, are hypocritical because we are so concerned about babies in the womb, but we maybe are. There have been pro-life leaders saying, well, as Dr. Delgado has said, we need to be more moderate in our response, that we maybe have gone overboard in our response. If that's a question that you'd like to ask as well, we'd love to have that conversation. We don't shy away from any conversations during pro-life open forum. 888-318-7884.
This is Bishop Chad Zielinski from the Diocese of Fairbanks of Northern Alaska, and you are listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at magnificat.com.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
We pray because we want to come into union with God. He wants to breathe His life into us, and we want to accept that life. Because in accepting that life, we begin to experience the abundance that He has in mind for us to receive. Pray to God. Lift your praises high to God and present to Him every supplication that you might find the grace you need for the present moment that He presents to you. Everything good comes from prayer, says Mother Teresa of Calcutta, and so it is true.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Dr. George Delgado, and it's a pro-life open forum. So if you have questions about, you don't have to be a pro-life person to ask your question, but anybody's welcome to ask their question. But we are pro-life people, and so if you have a question about what we believe, and there's very few people more qualified than Dr. Delgado to talk about what Catholics believe about the care of life in all of its different stages and its various conditions that most of us will experience at some point over the course of our lifetime. 888-318-7884. We'll start with Glenn in Ohio. Glenn in Ohio, are you there with me?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call. And I waited 2 days to get to the pro-life because I am a pro-life person. I have 3 children of my own and 7 great-grandchildren, and I wouldn't want to be without any one of them.
Praise God. That's beautiful, Glenn.
So I am very much pro-life. But my situation and question today is something I think that is near and dear and maybe misunderstood by a lot of Catholics, and that's contraception. First of all, I think that abortion, one of the primary issues for abortion, and if you'll allow me to say, It's lustful masturbation, and the inevitable result of that leads to abortion. So I just really disagree with that. But to preclude that opportunity from affording itself, there's such a thing called contraception. And contraception, it can come in many, many different forms. For instance, for approximately 20 years, 12 times a month, a woman offers an egg for fertilization. Who has the responsibility of fertilizing that egg or letting it just drop and die, not be used? Or can contraception of some form be performed, which is contraception by timely withdrawal, temperature, counting days, and doing all of these things as a form of contraception? Or you can use the more sure version, and that is with a prophylactic. And
so, Glenn, let me just get something clear. So you're disagreeing with the generally understood Catholic position on the ethics of this and saying that natural family planning, in your view, because it involves abstaining from sex during ovulation, is contraception.
Can you say that again? It didn't register.
Oh, sure. That's fine. It sounds like you disagree with the Catholic teaching that abstaining from sex during ovulation is acceptable. You're calling it contraception. So that makes it sound objectionable to you. Do you object to abstaining from sex during ovulation?
Is that a form of contraception?
That's the question. Okay, very good. Doctor.
Sure. So I think that's a great question. And the answer is sometimes, and it depends on the intent. So first of all, when we look at ethical actions, we look at, first of all, the action itself. In this case, it's an inaction. It would be abstaining from intercourse with your wife or the wife with her husband because you know that you're in the fertile time, the woman is in the fertile time. So that action, that inaction in and of itself is neither morally good nor evil. It's neutral. Now, then you get to the intention. What is the intention? And so if a couple has discerned with carefully and trying to follow God's will, and they determine that temporarily now is not a good time for them to conceive a child, then they can, with that intent, abstain from having intercourse during the fertile time, and that would not be morally objectionable. So that would be fine, and that's the proper use of the knowledge of the fertility cycles or the proper use of natural family planning. If, however, a couple abstained because they were being selfish and they were not intending to follow God's plan, and let's say for some selfish reason they did not want to have a child, then that would ethically, morally not be acceptable. And some people would call that using natural family planning with a, quote, contraceptive intent. And I think that that's what you were indicating with your comments. And so it is very important to know that these tools, although they may be used for good and they are not intrinsically evil, they can be misused. Natural family planning can be misused. Now, let's just juxtapose that with contraception itself, what most people call contraception. That would be for, like what you said, using a prophylactic or a condom or birth control pills, etc. Now, these are different because they are intrinsically evil. And what that means is that they can never be used for a good, because in and of themselves, they change God's plan or go against God's plan and design, either by circumventing it, blocking it, either physically or chemically, or altering it. And by doing that, by altering God's plan for reproduction, they are intrinsically evil. And that's why contraceptives used for contraception can never, never be accepted. But that's why natural family planning, since it does not change the design, is not intrinsically evil, can be used when used properly. I hope that makes sense to you.
Does that make sense, Glenn?
Is it out of bounds to say that every time that a woman ovulates, that her husband should offer the fertilization?
Is the husband required?
No, I think it means, and what the church teaches, is that the default is that any time a woman is in her fertile time when she ovulates, the default should be that yes, they have normal human, normal relations, and that if God blesses with them with a child, they accept it. And that the exception should be that if they have a good, serious, or grave, or just reason, different words are used in different translations of the of Humana Vitae, that if they have a serious reason to abstain, then it is okay for them to abstain. That would be, I think, the better wording of it.
Glenn, thank you. It's sometimes couples who are practicing natural family planning will make that decision and then not succeed in a certain month. They will engage in intercourse during that. And then they sometimes will ask us the question, is that sinful? Like, well, we had made a decision, and then, but it's not sinful to engage in intercourse as a married couple.
Is exactly.
That, yeah. Okay. Just want
to, as long as it's a total gift of self and they're both giving of themselves to each other, then it's a beautiful thing no matter what, even if they had made a decision before. Because the beauty of natural family planning is that God gives us the opportunity every month and really almost every day and every month to make that choice again and to choose life or to prayerfully choose to abstain because there's a serious reason to abstain.
Gabriel in Texas, listening on Armor of God Radio, you are next. Gabriel, your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Yes, Dr. Delgado, just to kind of set the stage real quick, you know, we as Catholics cannot support abortion in any form, directly or indirectly. So the question to that is, as elections are coming up here shortly, are we obligated, do we have a duty to help elect those individuals that are pro-life?
Okay, Gabriel, I'm going to leave it there just because it's kind of tough to hear you, but we did get the question. And so in this context, especially in this election year, Gabriel wants to know, do we have a duty as Catholics to vote for people who are pro-life?
Yes, and that's a great question. And the Church teaches that we do, that we it's our actual responsibility to participate in the civic process and the voting process and to elect leaders who will contribute the most to the common good. Now, when you talk about the common good, some people will distort that to say that, well, if a politician is really great on immigration and controlling crime and helping the poor, then it's okay if that politician is pro-choice or pro-abortion. But that's not the case because we have to look at the hierarchy of goods. When we look at the hierarchy of goods, the greatest good, the greatest gift that God has given us is life itself. And so human life should be top on the list. And so it really should be that if a politician does not support life and therefore is pro-abortion, then you should not vote for that politician and you should vote for the one who is pro-life, even if that other politician maybe isn't as good on some of the other issues that you find that are very important.
Go ahead, doctor.
The other case is if you have two politicians who are pro-life, then you can use the other issues to distinguish between the two. Or if you have two politicians who are pro-abortion, then use the other issues, the lesser issues, to distinguish between the two.
Unfortunately, here in California, we have this weird way of voting where it's top two run against each other. And so we get a lot of elections where it's two pro-choice people, where we're stuck with, you don't get a choice as far as the life issues go.
Right, you don't. So in that case, you can either have a sort of a protest vote where you vote for a lesser candidate who has no choice to win.
Yeah, right.
Or you pick the true pro-abortion candidates and find the one that's most consistent with other Catholic teaching.
Thanks, Gabriel. Appreciate the question. Greg in Florida is next. It's a pro-life open forum with Dr. George Delgado. Go ahead, Greg, your question.
Hi. Okay, so can you hear
me? Yes, we can hear you, Greg.
Okay, wonderful. So thank you so much, Doctor, for all your work. So I'm very pro-life and very active and excited about the pro-life mission. And my similar question to Gabriel's is that in this coming election, some of my Catholic, even pro-life friends are wondering, you know, is voting pro-life really going to do anything in terms of not only reducing the number of abortions, but actually outlawing abortion? Like, we've had pro-life presidents before and nothing really happened. And so,
yeah, Greg, I'm going to let just because we're running right up against the break, I'm going to let the doctor answer that. It does seem sometimes that even when we elect pro-life abortions, they don't do anything pro-life. So Greg's saying, his friends are saying, there's no point.
Yeah, now we have to be careful that we don't fall into that sort of jaded perception of things, because I think they do make a difference. And we see right now with the current administration, the Supreme Court justices that have been appointed, who by all appearances seem to be very pro-life. And so there's a very real possibility that if Roe v. Wade gets brought to the court again for examination, that it will be overturned either at the current court or if one other justice is appointed. So I would say vote pro-life, be patient, do not fatigue in the whole situation.
Don't get tired. Keep fighting. It's worth it. Fighting for life is worth it. Greg, Gabriel, thank you both for your questions. It's Pro-Life Open Forum. Dr. George Delgado, 888-318-7884.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Why is it wrong to help someone commit suicide? Don't people have a right to die with dignity rather than being a burden to others? Does the Church teach that the terminally ill must be kept alive by machines for as long as possible? In 20 Answers End-of-Life Issues, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, helping you unravel the controversies and confusions surrounding euthanasia, assisted suicide, and the rights of patients in our uncertain healthcare future. 20 Answers End-of-Life Issues is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Many Catholics ignore the Bible. They say they have the Church instead. But we should embrace sacred scripture, not just as the revealed Word of God, but as a Catholic work, intimately connected with the Church from the earliest centuries. In The Bible is a Catholic Book, apologist Jimmy Akin shows how the Bible cannot exist apart from the Church, in its origins, in the truths it contains, in its careful preservation over the centuries. Scripture is inseparable from the Catholic faith. This is fitting, since both come from God for our salvation. If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. After all, Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 1-844-239-4952. Visiting shop.catholic.com or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Dr. David Anders here. Where is purgatory in the Bible? Why confess my sins to a priest?
Find out more tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on Call to Communion.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
We've got these digital deals going on, and I was hearing today from the marketing department, one of the great things about it is people all over the world can get these. They don't have to worry about delivery. So I just want to remind you that there are these deals over at shop.catholic.com, like get 5 books in the ebook version for $25, or get the magazine you can get 1 copy or, 5 copies. So there's deals there on getting the magazine. You can even get like 8 years worth of digital issues for $39.95 right now. So there are a lot of digital deals over at shop.catholic.com. If you're in a, especially if you're in a place where it's hard for us to deliver to, and there are some countries where I've had people tell me, I just don't order books from you because it costs 5 times as much as the book costs just to get it delivered here. Well, all that e-stuff is available to you. So, or, if you're just home in your apartment in, I'm going to pick a city, Kansas City, and you want some digital stuff, it's all on sale over at shop.catholic.com. Dr. George Delgado is our guest this hour, and it's Pro-Life Open Forum. Dr. Delgado is the medical director of Culture of Life Family Care near us here in San Diego County, and he's a board-certified physician in family medicine and in hospice and palliative care, and a well-trained Catholic ethicist as well. So we welcome your calls on the treatment of life from its conception to natural death, or even, if you have a question about contraception, you have a question about whether it's moral to, engage in a certain kind of medical treatment. All of those things are on the line during Pro-Life Open Forum. We're going out to Barbara in Columbus, Ohio, listening on St. Gabriel Radio. Hi, Barbara.
Hi there. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. Your question for Dr. Delgado?
Well, my question is this. Given the fact that we're dealing with this COVID crisis and people are being required or placed on a ventilator, I just wondered if a Catholic should say, I don't want to be put on a ventilator, would that be a mortal sin?
It would not be mortal sin in most cases, but again, the intention is what really matters here. So being ventilator treatment would be considered something that is aggressive care that might be disproportionate depending on the circumstances. And if a person had a great fear of being on a ventilator for whatever reason, that in itself might even be reason not to go on a ventilator. However, if the person decided not to go on a ventilator with the intention of dying because the patient wanted to die and this was sort of a way of indirectly committing suicide, then that would not be morally acceptable and potentially could be a mortal sin. But for most people, it's that they feel that the treatment is perhaps disproportionate. Such a high burden to the treatment is another way of looking at it compared to the benefits that refusing that kind of aggressive care is generally not considered to be an evil act.
Does that get that?
Okay. Well, thank you for that answer. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I can see that you might be very afraid of a person might be very afraid of a ventilator. There is the case of some people have foregone the ventilator because they were actually in a situation of scarcity and they wanted someone else to have it. That seems to me morally heroic. I don't know what you think about that.
That would be morally heroic to forego medical treatment so that someone else could have it. It would be analogous to St. Maximilian Kolbe in the concentration camps, Nazi Germany, where there was a father of a family who was going to be taken off to be executed, and he asked if he could take his place, and so they took him and they executed St. Maximilian Kolbe instead. Very analogous situation, quite heroic, very virtuous.
Let's go now. Thank you, Barbara, for the question. Let's go now to Harry in Michigan. Harry, are you there with us?
That I have the right to tell someone if they choose not to do so, like me, I choose not to do so, then leave me alone. I choose not to have an abortion in my family. But I don't feel that I have the right to tell some other family as to how they are to run their family or their life.
Harry, you are on the air with, I just want to make sure that it seemed like we crossed there a little bit. So I want to make sure you're on the air with Dr. Delgado right now. So the position that you would like him to address is the person who doesn't believe that you can, that it's right to tell another person that they can't have an abortion. Am I getting it right, Harry?
That's part of it. I guess it was a two-part situation. I spoke to your person, the lady that I first spoke with.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I have noticed is that, and I brought it up to her, is that particularly in the South, a lot of people who are against abortions are also the people that don't have problems with doing harm to people that are of a different skin color than they happen to be.
All right. Well, I'm going to let the doctor address that. First of all, if you would, mm-hmm. doctor, the idea that one person doesn't have the right to tell another person they can't have an abortion, and then we'll get to the racial issue.
Right. So I would say this, if you don't believe that a family should have the right to kill their one-year-old child because they figure after a year, I don't think this child's right for a family, should that be left to the family to decide that, whether or not they ought to kill their baby up to 1 year of age? Most people in our society would say no. The society has to step in to protect the vulnerable. And we protect the vulnerable, we're protecting that child whose life is threatened by its own family. We also are protecting the vulnerable by protecting the person in the family, let's say the mother or the father, who has a misguided notion that he or she can and should kill the child. And so we're protecting more than one vulnerable person there. Same thing goes for abortion. We're protecting a vulnerable person who is a person just as much as any of us, whether we are babies, whether we are children, whether we are adults, or whether we are elderly adults, or whether we are preborn. We all have the same value in the eyes of God. And it's scientifically proven that that preborn baby is a human individual, human organism, is a human person, no different except on a different stage of the continuum of development. So therefore, if someone is misguided and thinks that he or she has the right to kill that preborn baby, well, then of course we as a society need to step in, just like we would step in to stop the killing of any other innocent person. So that's how I would counter that argument. And as far as people, I would not impugn the people of the South. I think the people of the South are great people, just like people all over our country are great people. We do have some people in all states in the country who are racist. That doesn't give anybody the right or the excuse to discount those people who live in those states who may have pro-life views, because you can, all of us are flawed human beings, and some of us may uphold the correct beliefs that support and protect life in some areas, but be misguided in other areas. But again, you have to look at the hierarchy, and I'm in no way condoning racism, but the sin of abortion is a sin of greater magnitude than the sin of racism. There are all sins against humanity, that's true, but one of them is actually taking human life, while the other one is treating people very, very poorly.
I mean, just to put it as bluntly as possible, there are millions of our black brothers and sisters who should be here with us, who aren't here with us. And frankly, I have to say, Doctor, my understanding of the history of the pro-abortion movement is that involves much more racism than the pro-life movement. There were people who intended to put abortion clinics in black neighborhoods because they didn't want so many black people.
Well, I would say that not intended, but intend, present tense.
First,
if you look at the founder of Planned Parenthood was Margaret Sanger, who is on record as being a eugenicist and who called African-Americans and people who are mentally disabled as being, quote, the weeds of humanity. So Planned Parenthood started as a racist organization. It continues to be a racist organization because you're right. Currently, there is a disproportionate number of abortion clinics in African-American areas in our country. And to top it all off, and this should be the real whopper of all for you, Harry, is that when you look at the racism-abortion link, that African-Americans make up 13% of the American population. However, 39% of all abortions in the United States are carried out on African-Americans. So African-American preborn babies, both male and female, African-American mothers are all victims of the medical abortion complex. So this, to me, is the supreme height of racism that goes right along with pro-abortion stands and with abortionists and abortion.
So much that we have lost to abortion. Who knows what those children, whatever color they were, whatever, race or ethnicity or religion they would have grown up to be. But certainly, what a tremendous loss of African-American life that could have added to our culture. And maybe, those are the very people who would have been so instrumental in helping other people overcome their racism. I mean, I don't want to put that burden on every black kid that's born, but it's so many beautiful lives missing. And a lot of them intentionally targeted, frankly, because they're black. And it's horrifying. So I don't know, but I probably speak more strongly than I should on this one. But come on. 39% of the people who are aborted in this country are black? Did you just say that, 39%?
Yes, they make up 13% of the population, but 39% of the abortion, so three times the proportion, exactly. So they are definitely targeted, there's no doubt about it. Where the abortion clinics are, who gets aborted, it's black babies, much higher rate.
That's sinful. That's what that is. That's sinful. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with more Pro-Life Open Forum with Dr. George Delgado.
Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I've got a few things here and there that I've learned along the way. I'm always studying history, and I love studying history. So I try to bring in some of the historical perspective, especially at a time in our history when people don't know much history anymore.
Open Line with Father Mitch Pacwa, tonight, 10 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's street evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Second hour, Carlo's going to be here, Carlo Broussard. And it's always fun when Carlo's here. But I love when he does these Bible blueprint things. And we're going to talk about, you know, Mary. That Mary in the Bible, always controversial. People want to know, where do you Catholics get all this Mary stuff? Well, Carlo is going to talk about it. And whether you're Catholic or not, you're welcome to call. We'd love to talk about it with you. This hour, it's a pro-life open forum. Our good friend, Dr. George Delgado from Culture of Life Family Care is here to help us answer your pro-life questions. We go now to Massachusetts, Luca, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 130. Luca? You with us?
Yes. Hello, both of you.
Hi, Luca.
Hi. So I am a Catholic who is pro-life, you know, just as much as the next Catholic, I guess you could say. But I was wondering, like, if we shift the discussion away from, you know, it being right to be pro-life or and wrong to be pro-choice or anything like that, and start to talk about, like, legal ramifications for what should happen once a woman decides to have an abortion. I think I'm someone who, you know, is more open to having to considering like alternative measures than just like, I don't know, considering it homicide, for example, or full-blown infanticide. Is that like a possibility in the Catholic discourse? Like, I don't hear much about that.
Well, that's a good point. And I think what you have to do is you have to look at the situation for what it is and what definitions are. And abortion, really, homicide means the killing of a human being. That's what the roots of the word are. So it really is homicide from that general sense. But from a legal standpoint, homicide has a certain legal definitions. So I think we can't lose sight of what's really happening, which is an innocent human being is being killed. But again, look at the intent and the circumstances, and the intent and circumstances often would draw us as Catholics to a position of mercy. And that position of mercy may well be that we do not prosecute women who have abortions, just like, for example, in some states, attempting suicide is illegal. But when was the last time you saw someone who survived a suicide who had to go to jail? You don't. And abortion is very analogous to suicide in my mind, because suicide is a desperate person who sees no way out of his or her situation and wants to then tries to end his or her life. Well, abortion is also a situation of a desperate person who sees no other way out of the situation, but instead of ending her own life, she ends the life of a preborn child. So I think we should really be heavy on the mercy, but heavy on the justice for those who promote or provide the abortions, i.e. the clinics, the doctors, the Planned Parenthood types. Those are the ones who are victimizing both the mother and the baby for monetary gain. Planned Parenthood is a huge, huge half a billion dollar business that its lifeline, what runs its engine, is abortion. We make no doubt about it. When you look at these numbers, they provide only such percentage of our business is abortion. That's because they count any single encounter with a client or multiple things that they do in the same visit. And so that dilutes out the effect of abortion. When you look at the revenue percentage from abortion, you see that abortion is their cash cow. And those are the numbers you need to look at. And you see that they are really victimizing both the mother and the preborn. So that's where the justice should be very heavy, going after them and the ones who would provide the abortions, but heavy on the mercy for the mother, because she's going to need to have that mercy in order to raise her child and needs that example of mercy in order to be a good mother.
Okay, Luca.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think that when people, you know, I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, a very kind of urban environment, and I'm one of the few people who has a pro-life position. And, you know, you say pro-life and everyone automatically starts thinking about making it illegal for the woman to have an abortion and going to prison possibly and stuff. And it's just this kind of discourse about, you know, clamping down rather on like the industry rather than individual people seems like a lot more productive as a space for discussion.
Luca, I just want to tell you before you go, because I got to go on to another caller. If you're pro-life in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you're my hero, all right? You're my hero. One of my children was born in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in the city hospital there. I know Cambridge very well. And if you are pro-life there, can we send him a medal? Do we have any medals that we can send him? He can wear it around. Luca, thanks very much for the call. I got to get to more, though, so I'm going to keep moving. Anonymous, I don't have a spot for a location for you. Anonymous, are you there with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Your question for Dr. George Delgado.
All right. Thanks for taking my call. So I was wondering, what is the church's position in terms of, well, rather, what's the church's approach with dealing with explaining natural family planning to people in rural areas who are poor, don't have that much education? Because natural family planning is complicated. How do you get that message across without having to sell them on contraception first? Like, what is the approach there?
That's a great question, because you're right. Natural family planning actually can be very, very simple, or it can be very, very complex, depending on the model that you use. So the first thing, we always have to go to first principles first, because sometimes we start thinking about, oh, gosh, it's so complicated. People aren't going to be able to learn it. So then, well, gosh, they have to have contraception. No, they don't have to have contraception, especially if you go back to the principle that contraception is intrinsically evil. So it's a non-starter. That's what we have to, first of all, keep in mind. It is a non-starter. It should never be an option for anybody of goodwill, if anybody who's trying to follow God's design, whether they're Catholic or not. So that's the first principle. The second is that for people who have limited intellectual abilities, limited education, or limited resources, there are other options. So there are free natural family planning courses that are given that can be given by Skype or by Zoom or by any other platform, so that people in rural areas, if they have an internet connection, can do it. If they don't have an internet connection, if they have telephone, they can do it by telephone. If they don't have telephone, they can do it by mail, by correspondence. There are also teachers in all sorts of rural areas who can come and teach them. In fact, there have been studies done where natural family planning methods were taught to the poorest of poor in India, were primarily Hindu, and they did very well using these methods of natural family planning that did not require a lot of complexity, and their effectiveness rate at avoiding pregnancy was in the high 90%. So you can see that people who are in very, very poor situations, who aren't even Christian and don't have that sort of Christian background in order to use it, that they can do very well with it. So there's no excuse for people in rural areas. They may have a few more hurdles to climb, maybe finding teachers and things, but it's available. They can find it, and the message can get to them.
Okay, Anonymous.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's go to Leah in Florida, watching on YouTube Live. Leah, you with us?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. Your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hi, Dr. Delgado, and hi, Melanie. Hi, how are you? If families, well, back in the Old Testament times were encouraged to leave and cleave, like their parents, and go live with their new spouse. And then we had that admonition. Sorry. And then New Testament Pharisees were corrected by Jesus, saying that, you know, they shouldn't have excuses for not caring for their parents, you know, right, saying they're going to give their money or whatever to the church, but neglecting the family. So my question is, if society became more open to bringing back in your auntie, your uncle, your grandma, your grandpa, whomever, to care for them within your home instead of outsourcing their health care or just their living, you know, quarters, then wouldn't that inspire more pro-life attitudes and more positive attitudes towards end-of-life issues?
Yeah. All right, Leah, I'm going to let Dr. answer because we're getting near the top of the hour. Dr. Delgado?
Yes, so that's a great point there, that having families together and seeing the fragility of the different ages, whether it's a newborn baby who's totally dependent or an elderly person who's becoming more dependent, are great pro-life lessons. And that's, you know, part of what we talk about, the domestic church. That's part of living the gospel right there in your own home. And I always recommend this to families when they're wondering, you know, gosh, my parent or my aunt or my uncle is needing more care. I always ask them gently, of course, not trying to impose, but to propose, have you thought about taking him or her into your own home? The blessings there will be great, and there'll be manifold blessings to all the people, and the ones giving the care actually are the ones who are blessed the most. And sometimes it's a real form of humility for the dependent people to accept that help from their families, because we have this ethos in the United States that we should be independent and we shouldn't depend on others. And so that leads us to sort of to older people kind of putting themselves in nursing homes instead of having the humility to ask their families for help. And I really encourage this, and I think that this can lead to a great blossoming of a pro-life ethos in our nation.
I think a great example. Leah, I'm going to let you follow up. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that a lot. Thank you.
I really appreciate your point. I actually think this is one of the areas where many of us who were raised in the United States need to be evangelized by immigrant families who seem to not have lost this in many cases. They bring with them the tradition of the multi-generational family living together.
Yes, absolutely. Great, great many blessings with that multi-generational family.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it too, I mean, I suppose it's in an exaggerated sense, we're seeing that now. Just the sense that these homes that are full of elderly folks, as good as they are, those people might have been better served not to be just clustered together, but to be out in the community.
Absolutely. You know, we see the effects of social deprivation and the effects that they can have on immune systems, on health in general. I just have a quick anecdote of a nurse shared with me that there was a nurse whose father was elderly, and he contracted COVID-19. He was hospitalized. He survived. But then when he came out, he was in a home and no visitors were allowed. And then although he had recovered from COVID-19, he became very, very depressed and he lost the will to live and he finally died from his isolation. That to me is a great poverty when we isolate our elderly like that. And even though in this case it was supposedly for his own good, it actually was short-sighted.
Yeah.
And the richness. And I also have heard of many families where when they saw this COVID-19 coming on, they took their family members out of the nursing homes, brought them home, and they did very much safer there.
People can find out about you at cultureoflife.org. Is that right?
Cultureoflife.org, yes. And they can also go to stenoinstitute.org to see about Steno Institute and covingplanningtools.com.
Dr. George Delgado has been our guest. Thank you, Dr. Delgado.
Great to be here.
Coming up next, I see him here already. I can feel the energy in the room. Carlo Broussard here. We're going to talk about the Bible blueprint for the Marian doctrines. I'll tell you what, if you're not a Catholic and you don't believe in all those Marian doctrines, Carlo's happy to talk to you. But if you are a Catholic and you'd like a little help on where those doctrines are rooted in the Bible, 888-318-7884. Right back with Carlo on Catholic Answers Live.